Chapter 6, The Burden of Solitude. Kathy spent the first few hours of the next morning trying to refine the position of the energy source for Larson's Folly. It was supposed to be somewhere within a torus that covered many tens of thousands of cubic light-years of space, but was not actually a ring of space as much as a ring of probability. She entered the data into her computer and made the ring visible inside the Raptor's navigation tank. Then the microprobes had to be parceled out and programmed by the swarm to travel to different sectors of the torus and scatter. There were other people responsible for searching the torus, but Kathy paid no attention to them. Her assignment was to work solo. When she was finished, Kathy launched two-thirds of her store of probes, wave after wave, traveling through hyperspace and emerging at the locations within the torus that she had determined. She saved some probes for any future need, especially any detail work that may be required. Upon their arrival, the probes scattered and began to search space for what? An energy source that hadn't been active for more than 2,000 years, and before that only for brief spans of time between long periods of inactivity. Something that was traveling in a known direction. Something that could be large or small, natural or artificial, inhabited or barren. Something that might have a recognizable footprint the way Larson's Folly did, or something that wouldn't stand out at all. It was quite possible that the object could be in her immediate neighborhood, but completely unrecognized. The probes had been programmed to search for any object that was traveling in the direction that Joy Weaver had determined, and that had any unusual phenomena associated with it, such as gravitational anomalies or high-energy potentials. If either or both of those qualities were discovered by the microprobes, Kathy would be alerted immediately. All other information was sent to the shipboard computer that would gradually assemble a survey of the entire area. If nothing significant came up when the survey was completed, then the data would be sifted with other variables in the hope that the energy source could still be found. After the microprobes had been launched, there was very little for Kathy to do. Her initial excitement had begun to wane noticeably before a week was out. Boredom had settled in like a great oppressive weight. She found herself relying on Rachel more and more. After all, wasn't that the Holocom's purpose? Wasn't that the primary objective of this voyage, to spend a year alone with a holographic companion? Yet somewhat to her surprise, she found that she wasn't comfortable with it and couldn't converse normally. Early one morning, a little more than a week after the microprobes had been launched, Rachel knocked on Kathy's bedroom door just after she had awakened. She came in at Kathy's invitation and sat down contentedly on the edge of the bed. "I can't read your thoughts, Kathy," said Rachel, "so you must tell me how you're feeling." "I'm glad you can't read my thoughts, Rachel, because you wouldn't like them. Tell me why you feel you have to knock before you come in." "I want to make sure that I'm welcome." "But you're already in here. You are in everything. You watch me while I sleep. You know when I wake. You know where I am looking every second. You know when my heart beats. You know when I breathe. You are already closer than my uniform. Why in blazes do you feel you have to knock before you enter? You know I'm programmed to act human." "Well, stop it. I know you're not human. And every time you try to act like one, it only makes it worse. So next time, don't knock. Don't come through the door. Just appear." Boo! Kathy jumped a foot. There behind her was Rachel, another Rachel, staring her right in the eyes and not 6 inches from her face. But this Rachel was upside down and standing on the ceiling. "There are many things I can do that you probably wouldn't want me to," said the two Rachels in unison. So, as the first Rachel faded away and the second rotated until she stood upright on the deck, "we'll have no more of that now, will we?" And as was Kathy's wish, Rachel popped out of existence. Kathy was taken aback. What just happened with Rachel? Was that in her programming? Dozens of people programmed her, and who knows what strange things might come from the interaction of all those subroutines. Can I really trust her judgment? Can I really trust her now? Days and then weeks passed without sunrise. Every hour within the Raptor was like any other. Each day the shipboard sounds were the same. They were few in variety but relentless. She knew that a number of carefully designed ambient sounds had been provided intentionally so as to break the utter silence of deep space and thereby contribute toward maintaining her mental health. She heard the soft hissing of hydraulic motion within the walls of her ship, the taps and clicks of automatic functions. One time she began to think of the sounds as evidence of rats or mice inside the walls, but she knew that was irrational. Within a month, she no longer kept track of time. She slept when she was tired, she ate when she was hungry. The view outside didn't change, a few stars and mostly blackness that went on for eternity. Without hyperdrive, she thought to herself more than once, decades could pass on this ship and I would see nothing different until I were 100 years old. A mind-ripping loneliness gripped her and she knew there was no escape or relief. Kathy, said Rachel one day, one of the probes is reporting back that it has located a star system that is moving in the proper direction. Kathy was running on the treadmill. The hollow screen in front of her made it appear that she was running through the woods on a narrow dirt track. What do you know about it? There are only 2 planets in the system, both of them gas giants close into a medium-grade star. Kathy's brow wrinkled as she ran. Not a likely candidate. I'm surprised you even brought this to my attention before getting more information, but who knows? The Xenobots might be hiding in one of the gas giants. We'll pay a visit to this system. It'll be sitting in deep space. Report the position back to Starlight Enterprise and then plot a course. She slowed down to a walk and bent over to catch her breath and then hastened to the shower. Half an hour later, she was on the bridge with Rachel standing next to her. Take us there, said Kathy. The passage through hyperspace lasted only a few seconds, and the Raptor emerged inside the star system that the microprobe had located. Sunlight, said Kathy. What a pleasure. Let's examine these planets. For the next 6 hours, she piloted the Raptor on an exploratory course around the first gas giant. It had no moons. Its cloud cover was mostly brown with light strips of turquoise and sea green. There was no sign of any living being on the planet or in its atmosphere. Its solid core was more than 1,000 miles below the tops of the clouds. A search of the second planet yielded the same results. As a last resort, Kathy distributed a swarm of microprobes throughout the system, searching for any small but powerful item that could be an energy source, but there was none. What we're looking for is not here, concluded Kathy. But let's stay in orbit for a while around this star. I miss sunlight, and these planets are beautiful. Once a week, Kathy shared a meal with Catherine Taylor via a holoscreen. They made a point of having the same menu and cooking their food in precisely the same way as if it were coming from the same kitchen. You spent months alone on your ship before you met Joe, said Kathy one day. How did you endure the solitude? Awful it was, Kathy, said Catherine. Especially for an extrovert like me. But you get used to it. After a few months you develop ways to cope, you know. Some new skills, hidden personality traits rise to the surface. There are some real benefits to being alone for a long time. The worst part of it is the first 6 months or so. After some time in space, the weekly meetings became difficult. Time flowed differently for Kathy. She had no fixed times to eat or sleep, and her set time to talk to Catherine became increasingly inconvenient. When she needed to sleep or wanted to exercise and had to rearrange her schedule just to keep the commitment even when she wasn't hungry. and preparing the meals became a problem. Although the Raptors' supplies were ample, there were times when Catherine suggested a meal that Kathy couldn't match for lack of ingredients. Kathy felt that her version of the meals became dull and boring. Rachel noticed Kathy's mood changes. "It is better if you have a fixed schedule, Kathy. It will provide some structure to your life and keep you from getting depressed." "I suppose you're right," responded Kathy absently. "Tonight after dinner you can read to me before I sleep, and we'll try to make that a pattern." "What would you like to hear?" Kathy paused a moment to think. "Little House in the Big Woods by Laura Ingalls Wilder," she said. "I think that's just what I need." Christmas came and went. In real time, Kathy shared greetings with her parents, Joe and Catherine Taylor and Mark Seaton and Stanoffi, and opened small gifts for the occasion that they had provided for her. She spent much of the day in the Chamber of Holograms in the Raptor, which she had programmed to provide the sensation of snowy woods. One of the trees was decorated with colored lights and glass balls. She remembered the walk she had taken in the snow with her brother nearly 10 years before. That evening, Rachel recited Dickens' A Christmas Carol to her while she drank hot chocolate. 12 days later, Kathy turned 27. She opened another gift from her parents. It was a canister of pistachio ice cream, which had been her favorite from childhood. It made her feel both loved and lonely at the same time. She began to wonder about her contact with others. Her weekly dinner appointment with Catherine was a burden to her, but had it also become a burden to her friend? Was Catherine calling her now just out of obligation? Her parents were always glad to hear from her, but there was little news to share, and conversation often lagged. She felt that she were worrying them. There was nothing to report to Richard Starlight. Mark and Stanoffi were busy. Did she demand too much of other people's time? Too little? She'd forgotten how to socialize. "All I have to do is set the controls to return home, and I could be back on Amania or at Edmondson City within an hour," she thought. "I could see people and touch them. But I would have failed my test and shown myself unfit to be a starman. But people would understand. They'd excuse me and let me find something else to do with my life. But that's not what I want. I have to stay here, keep going." She'd been alone for 6 months. "This is when it is supposed to get better," she thought. That's what Catherine said. But it's not better, it's worse. She laughed out loud when she remembered that the last human being she'd talked to in person was Gus. She tried to remember what his face looked like, what he smelled like. She remembered the grease on his clothing and tried to inhale the scent. She recalled his unshaven face and wanted to touch it, feel the scrape of his beard on her fingers. "No one has touched me for half a year," she thought. Sensations became very important to her. She paid rapt attention to the taste of her food. When she exercised, she drank in the sharp aroma of her own sweat and enjoyed how it glistened on her arms and forehead. She luxuriated in the feel of the thick towel on her skin when she dried off after a shower. She frequented the Chamber of Holograms and ran it through a gamut of colors, temperatures, and locations. Sunrise on the Sahara, midnight sun at the South Pole, an English park, a Japanese Zen garden, an African veldt, an ice castle in Finland, a light sea breeze in the Azores. She programmed it to provide random experience each time she entered it so that she never knew what to expect. And as the weeks continued to pass, the reports from the microprobes were all routine. If she hadn't checked the computer to see how the survey of the area was shaping up, she'd wonder whether the probes were even functioning. These times in the Chamber of Holograms were enjoyable at first, but grew to feel so crushingly artificial. In desperation, she prayed and pleaded for a sense of emotional warmth, of companionship. But the few times she did feel warm and comforted, she doubted its reality. She hugged herself at night before falling asleep. She began to question her mental balance and felt that she had no control over the direction that her mind was taking. Her few real-time conversations felt forced, as if she had to pretend that everything was all right so as not to worry anyone. She put up a barrier between her real thoughts and feelings and the people she conversed with. Rachel was no help. "You're a machine," thought the Starman. "Your words, your support, your presence are all artificial. You're a machine." This is how the Lucians became Xenobots. They depended more and more on their machines, their technology, and lost themselves. "The more I depend on you, the more like a Xenobot I become." So she felt more and more distant from Rachel. She suddenly became deeply aware of her mortality, her bodily needs. Eating became merely taking in fuel. Sleeping became the sleep of exhaustion. She watched her rations disappear. There was plenty of everything she needed, but she still noted that there was now space in the storage bins, and suddenly experienced an unfounded fear of dying of starvation. Her life depended entirely on those supplies, and they were diminishing. But Rachel needed nothing, no food, no sleep, no companionship. Kathy felt entirely cut off from Rachel. There was no reason to move the Raptor. Kathy sat and waited for the probes to report. And just waiting, she might as well wait near a star. For a few weeks, she moved back and forth into orbit over one or the other of the gas giants just for a little change. At first, she gazed through the view screen at whichever stunning planet was below her. And stunning they were, but as time went on, they came to appear so similar that she stopped moving between them, and then came to a time she only rarely looked out of the view screen. The solitary Starman spent hours just lying down and remembering her life. Over hours and days at a time, she called up every memory she had. She recalled old conversations, sensations, adventures. She remembered everything she could. She spent those hours in silence. Rachel tried to engage her in conversation. "Tell me what you're thinking about, Kathy," she said cheerfully. "Oh, go away, Rachel," was her reply at first. But as time crept by, Kathy began to talk, even though she knew she was talking to a machine that knew all the facts of her life already, a machine that could only pretend to respond to the emotions. But still it was good to talk and let herself slip and talk as if Rachel were really listening. She described the events of her childhood, recounted trips she had taken, sang the songs her mother and father had sung to her as they'd put her to bed when she was small. She told Rachel about going to school and visiting Earth for the first time. But in the end, it was only Rachel. She might as well have been talking to empty space. There were times of great comfort when she felt centered. Those were days of quiet purpose and achievement. Insights and joys came to her as she read, put her memories into place, made her routine reports, used the entertainment programs aboard the Raptor. She conversed with Rachel in Amanyan and asked Rachel to tell her stories she'd never heard before, such as Amanyan folk tales. She reveled in the extent of beauty and culture in her life and the limitless horizons of knowledge. But then time crushed in as she realized how far away she was from any of the sources of her joy. But the microprobes continued to provide only uninteresting information. There were also many days that were emotionally dark for Kathy, and her loneliness was acute. Her mood swings became erratic, so that even Rachel could not anticipate them. One day Rachel said, "I know this must be difficult for you, Kathy. Maybe we could come up with a few changes in our routine to help you deal with the stresses you're under." Even to her own surprise, Kathy erupted in a blaze of anger. "You think I don't understand what you're doing?" she shouted. "You must think I'm stupid. I practically wrote that subroutine that you're using to comfort me. When I talk to you, I'm just talking to myself. You're no help at all. You're no more than a machine. You're not my companion, you're my jailer. Leave me alone. Turn yourself off. Come back in 24 hours. Kathy raised her arms in frustration. "But you can't turn yourself off, can you?" She clenched her fists, and her face was contorted with fury. "You can only disappear, but I know you're there. You're always monitoring my heart rate, my blood pressure. You're always watching, even when you're silent and invisible. I know you're there. Your unsleeping eyes are always watching. Always, always, always." Rachel flushed and shot back. "You think it's easy dealing with you? I'm sick and tired of your self-absorption. Every time I try to be a friend, all you can say is, 'I know what you're doing because I programmed you.' Well, you weren't the only programmer, and I may say, Princess, you were far from the best one. If you want to spend the next 6 months alone, that's fine with me. I'll happily sleep away the time lying dormant in computer memory, which would be a lot better than having to wake up to your ingratitude, condescending insults, and belittling commentary every day." Kathy's eyes and mouth opened wide, but no breath came out. She felt as if she had suddenly been slapped hard across the face. Tears burst from her eyes, and with a gulp and a loud cry, she ran to her sleeping quarters and screamed, "Shut the door! Leave me alone!" The instant Kathy was inside the room, Rachel slammed the portal solidly shut with a loud noise. Inside, Kathy turned helplessly from one side of the room to the other, finding no solace, no place of comfort. She began to wail and dropped to her knees. She pressed her face to the bed and tried to calm herself with complete lack of success. Months of frustration and fear and anger and even grief gushed out of her. She couldn't stop the tears, and she pounded the bed with her fists harder and harder, screaming inarticulately all the while. After a few moments, she was able to gain some control of her emotions. "Where's Rachel?" she wondered. "In all of my need, she's always been beside me, and now she's left me to myself. She can appear in this room if she wants, but she's not doing it. She's left me." Then Kathy laughed at the irony. "She can't leave me. She has to do what I tell her to do. She's a machine." She paused a moment and thought some more. "But I don't know her, not as well as I thought I did. She shouldn't get mad at me. Certainly shouldn't insult me. That's not her known programming. She..." Suddenly Kathy was shocked. A flood of insights overwhelmed her, one after the other. She became frightened that she could lose Rachel, and without her she would face months in space alone. Then she realized that up to that point she hadn't been alone. Not with the desolate aloneness that she'd know if her holocom wasn't beside her. And then she understood that she really liked Rachel, and that by treating her as a mere machine, no matter how sophisticated, she'd kept her at arm's length unnecessarily. Then Kathy slumped a little inside and realized she'd have to apologize. And then she stopped short with a little laugh, thinking about apologizing to a computer. But something more than a mere computer, more than a machine. Rachel was a companion who was able to express a spectrum of feelings, and most of the caring that many humans and Amanian people had put into her for Kathy's own sake. Rachel's caring was a genuine and reliable fullness of emotion from many real people, patterned through the holographic companion's personality. With a surge of warmth, Kathy realized that she was, in fact, not alone. Rachel was a friend she needed. Chastened and in profound need of companionship, she turned to the portal of her room and opened it manually. She slipped out and returned to the deck. Rachel was still there, almost as if she hadn't moved. Her eyes were on Kathy, showing neither rebuke nor friendliness. She just looked. Kathy came close to her but dropped her eyes as she came within arm's reach and then collapsed onto the floor, covered her eyes, and wept. Slowly the holocom sat down next to the miserable woman and gathered her into her arms, laying her cheek on top of Kathy's head. "You're not real," Kathy's mind whimpered, but her heart paid no attention. She let the semi-solid holographic arms gather her in. She could almost hear Rachel's heartbeat. On her cheek, she could feel the rhythmic pulse in Rachel's breast. She was comforted. 2 months after her birthday, she awoke after a full night's sleep. Ah, she sighed. She got up, arched her back, and stretched. The smell of freshly brewed coffee wafted down the corridor. "Good morning, Kathy," said Rachel as she appeared at the door. "You slept well, didn't you?" Kathy laughed. "If you tell me that my REM sleep was perfect, I'll fill you with static electricity." "Yes, I slept well. I dreamed of the time when Sister Roswitha comforted me when I was on retreat in Bethesda in the early days after my brother died. That was a time of grief far too much for me to bear. But somehow I also knew comfort, unlike any that I ever knew was possible." Rachel followed Kathy as she went into the bathroom. "And that same comfort was there for you now, wasn't it?" Kathy looked up from washing her face. She wore a thoughtful expression as she reached for the towel. "Yes, it was. I didn't recognize the comfort for what it was back then in Bethesda, but it returned to me later, and it's come several times since." "Including right now?" "Yes, including right now." The pain faded as she became less intense. "It's always there in some way, but the comfort stayed and actually deepened." She hung up the towel. At least sometimes it seemed so. She turned and looked at Rachel. "Today would have been my brother's birthday, you know, March 12th. He would have been 36. The last time I saw him was 10 years ago today." She smiled. "You've been doing very well the past few weeks, Kathy. You've come through the most difficult period of loneliness. This will be an especially good day for you. Enjoy your breakfast, and then I'll give you some news." "News? Yes, indeed." "What news?" Rachel laughed. "One of the probes has found a most unusual item. I'm sure that it's what we're looking for. It's a dwarf exoplanet coupled with a tiny piece of ultra-dense material. It's traveling in the right direction, and it abounds with anomalies."